At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at ninernoise.com, and here with me, as always, as the break is over, we're into this thing, fellow contributor and all-around good guy, Mr. Akshaz Divadula. Akshaz, the off-season is over, officially, pretty much. It's time to go. Here we go. How you doing?
Doing good, Robert. You know, it feels like just yesterday that the draft just ended, and we're sitting here talking about how there's nothing that would happen, and then boom, gets right back at you. But I'm excited. Yeah. You know, I'm ready to get hurt again, as I always am when it comes to 49ers football. I'm preparing myself for another year of the grind, but it's super fun and super excited to be with you to kind of ease us into the new year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping we're not going to be hurt again. It'd be really nice if we didn't. I'll also say this, I think, hold on, quick math. I think this is going to be the sixth season of this podcast. We've only had one bad year. So I've been kind of spoiled since this podcast has existed. That of course was the 2020 year, right? When everybody got hurt and the team was terrible. It worked out in the end, you know, Nick Bosa and everything, but these things will happen. So we've got a lot of things to cover. Obviously training camp officially practicing for everybody begins tomorrow as we are recording this on a Tuesday night, or Tuesday afternoon, depending on where you might be. And so the rookies reported last week. Veterans began to report today, and so lots to cover there. And so, of course, we got to begin with the topic that is on everyone's lips, the very most important thing to talk about first and foremost, and that is, of course, not the thing that you're thinking about. I'm actually just a little bait and switch here. We're going to talk about the 49ers announced their jersey schedule for next year. That's what everybody wants to talk about, right? Oh, gotcha. that really did happen. They really did announce their jersey schedule, but that's obviously not the most important thing to talk about. but I did want to mention that it's out there. And the reason I want to mention is because I feel like the NFL continues to be no fun and criminally under forces the 49ers to not allow them to use their very sweet classics and throwback jerseys very frequently. So basically all of they're wearing the red primary jerseys for the most, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Is that right? Yeah. 9 times they'll wear the red home, regular homes. Only 5 times they'll wear the white home or away jerseys, the red classics twice. I think both there for Sunday night against the Cowboys and Monday night against the Lions, week 8 and 17, and then the white classics on a Thursday night game against the Seahawks. So that'll be fun. I just wanted to point that out. But obviously that's not what everybody cares about. I just thought that would be a funny way to grab everybody's attention and then totally pull the rug out from under you. so I've been thinking, the sad part is I've been thinking about that for 4 days. but it worked. It got the laugh that I was looking for. So I appreciate your sense of humor, Akshaz. Any thoughts on the jersey schedule?
You know, I'm wondering if the 49ers will eventually just make the 94 throwbacks their like actual jerseys, because it seems like they want to wear them a lot. I don't know. This is like, it feels like every team rebrands every 3 or 4 years. So I feel like there's a discussion to be had about altering the jerseys that are here right now. I still think it's super lame that the NFL doesn't let the Niners play in the Super Bowl in the throwbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But not for fun.
The last time they did, they won it. So I'm just going to throw that out there. Mm-hmm. They won the Super Bowl was the 75th anniversary season or something like that. That was a long time ago. Anyway. All right. No, but actually the thing that we really need to talk about at the top here, there's a lot of conversation about the jerseys, is that the Brandon Ayuk situation lingers on. There is still no contract. There is still a dispute. Obviously, he requested a trade about a week ago. Really interesting timing on the request there. And we can talk about the nature of why that happened and that sort of thing. But the real surprising thing is I mentioned that veterans reported the camp today, and he is reportedly showed up. I'm assuming we got sort of confirmation during Shanahan and John Lynch's press conference this morning, but obviously we won't have like full on confirmation until we, you know, see him on the field, but I'm pretty sure all reports and everything indicates that he is there. So the question becomes, Akshaz, first of all, what do we make of the trade request at this sort of very late hour in the process? Second of all, what do we make of the fact that he showed up at all, and what do we think is going to happen now?
I think the trade request makes sense. It's like one of the remaining kind of pieces of leverage he has. And yeah, like, I don't think it means nothing. The Niners like looked into trades with him. He probably wants to get paid anywhere at this point, and it's just a way to try to get some pressure going. So I don't read too much into it. I think in the NFL, trade requests are like very, very meaningless for the most part, because it's very hard to like actually compel a team to do anything, because mm-hmm. each player's contracts are so heavily guarded around like every contract seems to be, with the exception of all the stuff Kirk Cousins does, seems to be designed for players to not make a lot of money unless they're like on the field playing super well, unlike other sports where guaranteed money is guaranteed money. So that's my thoughts there. I wasn't surprised that the Niners immediately said, no way. I wasn't also surprised that John Lynch said, Brandon's going to be a 49er, but we'll always listen. Because, you know, I think everyone remembers Shanahan's aggressive comment, I don't know if I'll be here over the weekend. But the logic remains that, like, they'll listen for everyone. The Niners are pretty ruthless, I would say. And I think that's a testament to how they do this team building exercise, because at the end of the day, to have a good roster for more than like 3 years, you have to be willing to move on the fly. But trade request wise, not a big deal to me. Him reporting to camp, I think, is super, super interesting. And honestly, in the most weird kind of like, because it doesn't seem like he's doing a hold in. It seems like he's just reporting to camp.
Right.
Honestly, this is more concerning to me than him not reporting to camp. And the reason is that if he wasn't reporting to camp, then that means that he thinks that there's like additional leverage to get there, right? And that means that the Niners and him will kind of be pushed towards a deal. And it probably could get done within, at least he would think that he's close enough to where the holdout in camp wouldn't so dramatically affect his financial situation, because the contract would get done soon enough, right?
Right.
But the fact that he doesn't think that, and obviously I don't know, I'm not Brandon Ayuk, I don't talk to him, so I have no idea if this is his thought process. Maybe he really wants to play. So, but like in the most like cynical and pragmatic perspectives possible, it feels like this is Ayuk's camp realizing they're not budging on this. So we're not going to be able to like make our get any money out of them. So either we don't go to camp, they don't move, and we lose the year. It tolls over, and we do the same thing next year, except now we lose way more leverage because we just lost a full year. Or we go to camp, we play on the fifth-year option, and then we hardball it once we get to playing on the tag, and things become a very different situation next year when the Niners face their cap crunch. So I don't like the way this is ending up here. I think you and I, in every podcast recap of a game we talk about, we always mention Ayuk as being somehow like the like linchpin of the 49ers passing attack. Like when they need yards, they go to Ayuk. And with the exception of a couple of somewhat off games, he's phenomenal. He's a top receiver in the league. If he gets more targets, he could be one of the most productive receivers in the league. He's one of the most efficient. And I think the Niners were really close to a deal and then kind of got pushed out by the incoming market. But I wrote an article a while ago about how they had run out of time on an extension. My logic was that it's taken them so long that they're not in a market they want to be. Mm. And the other guys up there, CeeDee Lamb needs to get an extension. Ja'Marr Chase is coming up in a year or so. Like, the longer they wait on Ayuk, the less likely they'll get anything valuable back in a trade, or they'll be able to get him at the contract they want to. Because whether you like it or not, Ayuk saw the Amon-Ra St. Brown deal and said, that's around where I need to be.
Yeah.
And the Justin Jefferson deal was like, that's the max of where I can be. But that's an astronomical high. But now CeeDee Lamb and Ja'Marr Chase, those guys have more production. And, you know, splitting hairs, you'd probably say they're better than Ayuk right now. But Ayuk can look at them, look at his role on the 49ers and all that he's asked to do and say, I should be paid like those players. And if the Niners don't get in ahead of that, like this is going to like go up way beyond anything they can handle, in my opinion.
Hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of that makes sense. The trade request is weird just because it took them a really long time to do it. Like you remember with Deebo Samuel, he did the same thing, but his was like in April or something like that. Like I think before the draft, if I remember correctly, he was like, "All right, well, you got to trade me." So he didn't even wait long enough for the process to really go through, and he was like, "I got to get out." And he did the whole hold-in thing, and everything was fine. The reporting certainly surprised me, but the more I've thought about it, and we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, it very similarly to what you're thinking here, it's you got to wonder if his camp is going, I just don't feel confident this is going to get done. You better not be losing $40,000 a day for not showing up at camp, right? That's a pretty large chunk of money for anybody, and even if he's making, you know, more money this year than he has in his whole career up to now, you know, you don't want to lose $40,000 a day, so I think that plays into it as well. And yeah, I think I'm right there with you. It's starting to seem less and less likely that this is going to get done. I think the situation has played itself out in such a way that the money is unlikely to line up. This feels very much like a guy who's going to be very motivated to play, which will be very nice for the 49ers in 2024, because they're going to get the best version of Brandon Ayuk that they can. And he's going to be really motivated to be the best player that he can be, which hopefully will work out. But I think it seems to me like this is moving in a direction of he plays on the fifth year option. They tag him next year, and then they look for a trade target after that. I think that seems like the most likely outcome at this particular point.
I agree up until the final part where I don't know if they'll trade him, because I do see where there's a world where Ayuk plays up to the lofty like valuation he's put on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And because like we all I've come to the conclusion that the 49ers are going to reshape this roster after 2024, 2025. We don't know what that will look like. We don't know who stays and who goes. But with the exception of Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, and Nick Bosa, everyone else, and Fred Warner, Mm-hmm. Everyone else on this team is like somewhat up in the air. And the and John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are going to have to figure out what pieces fit and what pieces don't. And so I could see a world where they trade Ayuk. I could see a world where Ayuk plays well enough to for them to be like, all right, we can meet that valuation. Mm-hmm. And they lock him up. But then that'll probably mean that Debo for sure has to leave, and maybe even Kittle too. I don't know. Like, I think it's hard to tell what they'll do next year, because this run from 2021 or so on of this iteration of the 49ers, this is it. Mm. And after that, I think the roster will be reshaped to be a very Brock Purdy-esque roster. And I don't know where Brandon Ayuk falls in that that view as of right now.
Right. I mean, that's certainly another outcome for sure. I think it just kind of depends on what kind of impact this whole situation has on the relationship there. You know, Kyle Shanahan seemed to downplay it a little bit. I think was it George Kittle who said something about something. I don't remember what the analogy that he used was. It was like, you know, the contract disputes or something. And he wish that I could remember what it was, because it's pretty funny. You know, he was just like, when you're in them, it seems like the worst thing, but once everything's all locked up, everybody's hunky dory and it's all fine. I mean, and we've seen that, because the only other time that it really got contentious was with Debo, to be honest. And then he's seemed to have been fine ever since then, you know, just on a personal level. So it'll be really interesting to see. I guess that is the other option here, is that he plays on this fifth year option. He has his best season yet. And the Niners decide, well, the best version of this offense in 2025 and beyond is Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, and some young guys. It's possible that that's the way this looks. Or maybe they decide the best version of this offense is Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, an older George Kittle, Debo Samuel. I don't know. We don't know. There's just a lot of ways this could go. Or really just the two ways that it could go, really. That's kind of it. I think we're past the point where a long-term deal is getting taken care of this offseason. And I think, and I don't know, I can't say if this is a situation where there's, like, the lingering has come to bite them in the butt. It's perfectly possible that's what's happening here. But I think the thing that you're pointing out about maybe they were on top of this, and then all the other receivers started getting deals, and Brandon and I got spooked, and it wasn't through no fault of their own. They're kind of out of luck in this particular case. I think that's a perfectly logical way of looking at this too.
I think, you know, one thing that the 49ers do is that they're very, very, very sharp on their valuations of players. That's been true so long as Prime Marate has been there as well, and how they structure contracts. And the other thing is that they don't give good player contracts. Like, this is not like a really negative or like, oh, they're a bad organization. This is just like how they operate. Their contracts are really team friendly. There's so many outs. There's so many ways to kind of break them in a way that doesn't harm the team. And that usually means not a ton of guaranteed money and a lot of year-to-year flexibility. So, you know, in another world, if the 49ers were a team that would be like, all right, we'll give you like 80% of your contract guaranteed, it'll be like completely locked in, there's nothing here, you could, maybe Ayuk would be more willing to accept a contract sooner. But, you know, with like Amon-Ra St. Brown making some $30 million a year, the 49ers offer of $26 million, I think, which is what it's been reported at, that's not going to cut it in comparison, because that's not a firm, solid, guaranteed every year over the contract. I know for a fact I'm getting 26. It's a 26 until we decide it's not a 26, and then we'll have to see what happens. So I agree. I think they were probably close. That's what it seems to be. And then the valuation jumped, and they weren't ready for that. I think Ayuk is rightfully trying to take advantage of an inflated wide receiver market. And the 49ers are very aggressively trying to say, none of these contracts make any sense. I'm not trying to do this dumb stuff right now, essentially.
Right. Right, right. Well, and I think you mentioned Ja'Marr Chase. I think the Bengals pretty much said we're punting on this until next year. Like, cause he's going to play on the fifth year option too. And it's just like, we're not getting into this thing right now. We got other things to do, which is kind of wild to think about, but anyway. All right. Other things are happening during training camp. As I mentioned, players just arriving today, you know, so they're doing physicals and making sure everybody's good. Speaking of physicals, the 49ers have placed, two players, I think technically on the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list, and one on the NFI list, non-football injury. So Talanoa Hufanga, obviously still rehabbing from his ACL repair from last year, still on the mend. So he's on the PUP list. That's totally fine. I think the goal there with Hufanga has got to be get him to week one. If he doesn't see, you know, any... It's not like he wasn't going to play in preseason games or anything anyway. So it's like, just make sure he's ready to go for the beginning of the season, because that will make the safety position feel a lot more, you know, safe, if you will, for next year. Dre Greenlaw, obviously also going on that list, having just torn his Achilles in February. We've talked about the timeline on that. It's very unlikely he's ready for the start of the season. Probably closer to, I think I've seen things as aggressive as like week five, week six, but it's probably something more like middle of the year type of thing, like week eight, nine kind of thing, especially with that bye week kind of in the middle of the season. I think that seems more likely. And then Ricky Pearsall is the one on the NFI, the non-football injury list. Nobody's actually saying what's going on there. It was kind of a weird, it's been kind of a weird thing with him. He was in a blue non-contact jersey during minicamp, which is kind of a strange thing to do for a player for a situation where you're not supposed to be touching anybody. So they were like, really, really don't touch him. like not even kidding. They keep saying it's not a big deal. So he'll still be doing rehab stuff or with whatever it is, but it is kind of interesting that they're being very hush hush about it and not saying what it is. So who knows? So anything, obviously no surprises there. George Kittle and Terrarius Ward are both good to go. They both had core muscle surgery over the offseason, but they're both good. You see, George Kittle lost 30 pounds
and gained it back.
That's impressive. I can't even imagine that. I mean, I could gain 30 pounds, not the way that he did, but I wouldn't have a problem gaining it back. You know what I mean? But yeah, any thoughts on injuries or anything?
Hufanga and Greenlaw, I think, kind of status quo there. I'm really interested in seeing what it's like when Hufanga gets back, because unless the 49ers sign Justin Simmons heading into the season, which honestly, at this point, I don't know why they haven't. If clearly, like, he's out there and there's not a lot of interest, it makes no sense to me that they're not trying to bring in some more players in the back end of the secondary. But that'll be explored further potentially in an article. But I think Hufanga, I'm really interested in seeing how he plays, because he's a very downhill safety, and I think Jair Brown has shown flashes across the field, but it's not 100% clear to me that he can play that free safety kind of center field role. Greenlaw, I just hope he gets healthy. I mean, I think Dre Greenlaw is a very mercurial figure. For me personally, watching him, he kind of hit my perception of his play kind of reflects how I feel about the 49ers at a particular point. If I like the way they're playing, then I think he's amazing. He's super aggressive. He's out there. He's dominating. If I think they're not playing so well, then I think Greenlaw's missing tackles. He's undisciplined. He gets out of position too often. So I just hope that the rehab goes well and that he gets healthy, because if I remember correctly, it's a contract year for him too. So
yes, yes.
Yeah, so.
Both of them, actually, Hufanga and Greenlaw, both up for, or both going to be free agents at the end of this season. It's next offseason is going to be wild, man. Yeah, I'm right there with you on both of them. And Dre Greenlaw just named 73, 76, I think, in the NFL top 100 for that stupid players list that's kind of weird. or was that? Yeah. So he's in the top 100. So good for Dre. Pearsall, Ricky Pearsall, any thoughts there?
You know, I don't understand what's going on. I don't like the fact that they're being secretive about it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really, really bad like thing to start for a receiver who desperately needs to like get kind of in line with how Brock Purdy throws the ball and get very comfortable. And I think it's especially bad because we all know Kyle Shanahan hates rookie receivers with a passion. So if they don't get in there and prove that they can play, there's like, that's a big problem. So hopefully he gets healthy soon. I think I read somewhere that he's going to miss the first four practices for sure. Mm. And they're hoping he can get back out there, but it's a big deal because it's a lot of time and he needs to get ready to go because he's part of this. I think he's part of the reshaping of the 49ers offense.
Yeah.
And you'd like to see him like not be a redshirt player, essentially, especially with how I think the 49ers are going to throw the ball more this year. He can add a really, really good element against some sticky coverage, but it doesn't matter if he can't get on the field.
True. It's also kind of strange, too, because I feel like there's a lot of good conversations about and talk about how good he looked during minicamp. So whatever he had, it was enough that they put the non-contact jersey on him, but not enough that he could go out there and run routes and people are like, oh, he looks really fluid and really smooth. So it's very strange. I'm right there with you. I'm sure it'll be fine. Cause like four practices is like Monday. But still it's like, what's going on here? Just like a little insight would be nice. All right. So, obviously training camp, lots to go on over the next couple of weeks. And then preseason starts in, I think, when's the 49ers' first preseason game? Chaz, do we have this at Artist Mesa? This is
we should.
Quality work.
The 10th at Tennessee.
There we go.
So August 10th, 4 p.m. Pacific time.
Travel all the way to stupid Nashville. If I cared about preseason games and felt like spending money on doing that is a reasonable drive for me, but that is just, that's not in the spending money category of things that I would want to do at this particular juncture. Just wouldn't be valuable time for me. So anyway, they've got about 2.5 weeks, something like that, 3 weeks until the game. So such as it is. So what I want to do is kind of talk about two things as it relates to training camp, because obviously this is where we get most of our thoughts about who's going to make the team and how that's going to work and everything. The preseason games give us a little bit, but I think we're all pretty aware that for the most part, people make the team based on what's going on in training camp and in practices more than they do based on how they played against the third string defense for the Tennessee Titans, which doesn't stand to be very good. So I want to talk about two things. First of all, what are some camp battles, some players that we're on the watch for, and then thinking about like, are there spots for rookies to kind of move into, maybe not like starting roles necessarily, but maybe into the starting lineup or maybe into like key roles heading into this season. So Akshaz, I'll start with you. What's one kind of camp battle that you have your eye on as you head into training camp this for this offseason?
So I think that the most important camp battle / the one I'm most interested in is a battle between Deonador Lenore, Isaac Yiadom, Renardo Green, and like Daryl Luther Jr. for the second and third cornerback spots. And so off the cuff, I know that there's a little bit of a hot take embedded in this because I did say Deonador Lenore's name in this battle, but I think as fantastic as Lenore has played, the 49ers, in my like very, very uneducated guess, are really only going to pay one of their two corners next year. One of Mooney Ward, Deonador Lenore is going to get paid. And even though Demo is very, very good, he doesn't really have the prototypical size of a number one elite travel corner, which I think will be a big issue compared to Mooney Ward, who, you know, can match up with the best of them. So I think Demo's fighting for a lot in this training camp. I think Yadam was signed to be a very effective kind of depth option and maybe fight for a starting spot. I think Renardo Green is being groomed for a spot, so it's really interesting to see if he can go up and grab it. And I think Daryl Luther kind of fits the prototypical size for a cornerback. But how this battle plays out will determine not only how the 49ers like cornerback room looks this year, but also how it'll look for like future years. Because if Yadam wins either as cornerback two or cornerback three, then Demo becomes the slot corner now in nickel formations and goes maybe outside, maybe off the field in two receiver sets. If Demo wins the cornerback two spot and Renardo Green wins the cornerback three spot, then Renardo Green is now the slot corner. Demo stays outside forever. If Luther wins somehow, which would be a major upset, but I think is possible, even though it was, this is a tangent, but it came in my head and now everyone has to suffer just like me, that the football, the punt bounced off his leg in the Super Bowl. That was the fumble that caused the collapse. But that's okay, Luther. We don't hold it against you. Even if he wins, then Demo goes to the slot. So you see, like, so many things can change around based off who gets the edge here. If I have to handicap a winner, I'd say it's probably going to be Ward, Lenora, Yadam, with Yadam playing the outside corner and Lenora slotting in. I think the other interesting thing here is that players like Ambry Thomas and Sam Womack are effectively out of this conversation. Like,
yeah,
quite a bit. So I think a lot of people will be talking about like Luther fighting with Thomas and Womack. I don't think that that Luther's in that area right now. I think he's fighting for starting minutes. And I think I think this can make or break the 49ers season essentially, because if their quarterback room can really, really lock in and become an elite unit, a truly elite unit, that changes the entire complexion of this defense.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we talked about how pivotal the offseason is going to be. Both Charvarius Ward and Deominor Lenore, as you mentioned, are also free agents at the end of 2024. So they're going to have some hard decisions to make there, too. Like you said, very unlikely they're going to be able to keep both. And if you're able to sign both, that means that something bad has probably happened, like somebody got injured or somebody played really poorly, and they're like, okay, fine, I'll come back on a 1-year prove it deal. So not really what you want. I think that threesome that you mentioned there with Ward and Lenore and Yadam seems to be the best case scenario. Although I think you can make a case for Renardo Green winning. Just taking a hold of the slot position and saying, okay, this is I'm your slot corner, like, and then you can't get rid of me, might be really like the best case outcome, because in that case you look at it and you go, okay, well, here's the guy for the future because he's rookie, and if he can win a starting job in the first year, well, then you're gonna get shape. So I think that's something to watch out for. I did want to amend something really quickly. First of all, I missed a name, a player that they added on the pup list. Drake Jackson also going on the pup list with that knee injury from last year. I also should mention John Lynch said during at some point it's a hamstring for Ricky Pearsall. So that's what that is. Take with that what you will. Anyway, so for me, something to watch out for, multiple things, but I think the big one is what is going to happen at the tight end position behind George Kittle. Obviously, we know Kittle is there. I think we can feel pretty confident that Logan Thomas has a leg up on either the other rookies, simply because he's proven that he can be a good player in the NFL, something that neither of the other rookies have been able to do. Obviously, that's really important. And then beyond that, is it a situation where it's a Cameron Latu or a Braden Willis, and then one of the other players gets released, and you hope you can bring him back on the practice squad type of situation? Be a real bad outcome, but it does seem that the 49ers are at least guarding against that as an outcome, right? They brought Logan Thomas here with the thought that we need to protect ourselves in case one of these kids doesn't work out. So that's really something to keep an eye on. The other one is, of course, we talked about Drew Greenlaw. What's going to happen in his absence at the linebacker position next to Fred Warner? Devondre Campbell seems to have been a guy that they brought in for cover there. But like I said, and we talked about this before, I think really the best case scenario again is that one of either Jalen Graham or D Winters, Fred Warner's favorite player, that one of the two of them takes the role. And that way, whether or not Greenlaw returns to the team or whether or not he signs somewhere next year, or if he comes back and makes an impact at the end of this year, if one of those younger guys can step in and take over, I think that's certainly the best case scenario, as opposed to a 31-year-old veteran who he'll probably be fine, but he doesn't have the chance to like step up and be fantastic in that position, more than likely.
I agree. I think tight end is going to be super fascinating, and there are a couple dark horses there, most interestingly Mason Pine, who probably is going to be a practice squad player for this first year, kind of let him grow and under the tutelage of the team, but not take a roster spot. I agree with you. I think Logan Thomas is pretty much a lock for that. I think I'm really excited for seeing him on the field. He was Washington's number one tight end option, so last time a Washington tight end played on the 49ers, worked out pretty well with Jordan Reed up until injuries eventually kind of took over his career again. And then linebacker, absolutely. I think this is some place where the 49ers just have a leg up on everyone else in drafting. I don't know what it is or how they do it, but I think D. Winters should be the player to get a crack at that strong side position. And like you said, I think it's the best case scenario for the 49ers that both Campbell and Winters play so well that when Greenlaw gets back and Greenlaw slides in, that you have a legitimate competition as to who takes a strong side position. And again, I think it's best if Winter takes it, because again, after next year, you don't really know who's going to be around and who's not with all the contracts that are up, and the linebacker room around Fred Warner might have a little reshaping, and Winters and Graham are going to be a huge part of it.
Mm-hmm. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Saving money on everything now at Menards. Create fresher, cleaner air with damp-rid products. Control the humidity in your space with a hanging bag moisture absorber. They're great for closets and laundry rooms. Grab a 3-pack on sale through September 8th. Save big on damp-rid moisture absorbers at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals. Save big money at Menards.
For sure. All right. So you mentioned Renardo Green. I've mentioned a couple of second year players with opportunities to take advantage of some opportunities here. Any other rookies, either from the draft class or possibly undrafted guys, that you think might have a chance to at least shake things up, at least get to be, you know, to be the Corey Sheets of 2024? It's like, oh, they came out of nowhere and they might actually have a chance to make an impact on this team.
I'll go with two. I'll go one on defense, one on offense. I'll go with three, actually. So one that I don't think is like a legitimate, like, oh, like dark horse out of nowhere, but I do think it's going to be way more important than people are giving credit for, is Jacob Cowing, fifth round pick receiver. I called him the unsung hero of the 49ers draft class, mostly because I think he has the type of speed that you can't teach, that the 49ers don't have on their roster other than Danny Gray, who is on the roster.
He's somewhere.
By like
theoretically.
The slightest, like, thinnest, like, whisper of a string. But that'll be an interesting competition to see if Gray can resuscitate his NFL career. But I think Cowing will be really big. I think when you have that type of speed on display, Shanahan's smart enough to find ways to take advantage of his abilities. I think he has showcased the ability to also be a really good change of pace, kind of directional receiver as well, which is something that really adds value for the 49ers. And of course, he might be heavily involved in return game as well. So Cowing, I think, is a guy who will see play, but I don't see him like grabbing a starting spot or anything. The other offensive player who I think really has a way to go and could make a huge impact is Dominic Puni, the third round tackle / guard / maybe center. And this is mostly because I don't think the 49ers trust Spencer Burford as at all anymore. And I think right guard is completely up for grabs. I also think right tackle is kind of up for grabs as well. And I think that's where Puni is really going to be focusing on this year. So do I think it's likely that a rookie offensive lineman starts for this team? No, not really. I think they really dislike doing that. And I think the Spencer Burford situation has effectively proved them right about starting rookie linemen and how they really need more time. But I could see Puni really, really making a push. He plays well. He's really, really physical, and he kind of fits the 49ers scheme very well. On the defensive side, I'm going to go with UDFA defensive tackle Evan Anderson. The 49ers need beef on the interior, their defense, and Evan Anderson, I think, is a guy who can jump in there with what seems to be a far more rotational defensive line this year than maybe last year and other years, and could provide some much-needed size. I also think DT is one of the weaker positions on the roster insofar as that's a place where a undrafted free agent could actually grab a spot. So those are my three. But honestly, with this roster, all three of those players could get a combined like five snaps this year, and I wouldn't be surprised. It's just that's the way it goes.
Yeah. Well, and I think in those moments, it feels like with Shanahan, it's been the undrafted guys have been either running backs or defensive tackles. It feels like those have been the guys that have cracked the lineup. Occasionally other positions, but we've seen a lot of those. Good names overall. I think Cowing too, when you look at him, if Ayuk is going to be there but not participating, like if he's going to do the hold in kind of thing, we don't know. They haven't practiced yet, so we have no idea. That's only going to benefit Jacob Cowing because they're going to be down another that's two receivers with Pearsall and Ayuk not participating in many drills, so you're down to a couple of receivers. Jacob Cowing's going to get an opportunity to show what he can do. I think it will be really interesting, the return game, especially with the change in the kickoffs, if that changes like the type of guy that you want back there, just because the way that's going to work, nobody obviously knows how that's going to work. It's going to be weird. The Dominic Puni one is very interesting in that you wonder, And I'm going to say this again. Hey, guess what? We're going to talk about another free agent in 2025. Aaron Banks is also going to be a free agent in 2025. So you wonder if Pooney is the Aaron Banks of this particular cycle, where they drafted him. They're anticipating not using him at all this in 2024. And then 2025, when they're expecting both Aaron Banks and probably John Feliciano, who I would say are the expected starters at the guard positions heading into the offseason and heading into the end of the season, that they're both going to be gone next year. And that will open up a spot for Dominic Pooney. It'll open up spots for other guys. They also have some interesting names like Jarrett Kingston from USC, who might have an opportunity to slide in and be a guy they can work on and progress. For my name to rookie to watch out for, I'm going to go with Malik Mustafa. We talked about Talanoa Hufanga and not knowing how he's going to be. Again, hopefully the expectation is that he'll be ready to go. I think Malik Mustafa's, barring any kind of like implosion, I think he's probably going to make this team, because I think he's going to be the type of guy that's going to be really useful as special teams player, and then allow a possibility of depth. And then you have Hufanga, Jair Brown, George Odom, and Malik Mustafa. Seems like a pretty good safety group to me, but I think he's just going to be, I mean, for one, he looks like he would hurt you if you got close to him. He's not like the biggest guy, but he just looks like he's been chiseled out of stone, and that he would probably lay a hurting on you. So he just feels like he's the type of guy who's coming here with the right attitude. He's got the thing that Talanoa Hufanga had when he came into the league. He's got a little chip on his shoulder, and he's coming in. He's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to be the best special teams player I can as a rookie. And who knows, that might be a good opportunity for him.
I agree. I think Mustafa he's a baller, which is the biggest thing. And I definitely could see the 49ers involving him a little bit. I think it would be very interesting, because it seems as though the 49ers have not guaranteed Hufanga everything, like a starting spot. You can see Mustafa potentially get run with the ones, which I don't think he'll be getting right now. I think they're doing George Odom and Jair Brown.
Yeah.
And just see how it goes, because, you know, when Hufanga got on the field, he was immediately electric. And I remember Kyle Shanahan saying that I didn't think he was any different than when he practiced last year, so maybe I should have just played him sooner. So get playmakers on the field as soon as you can. That's my motto.
Yep, all for it. And again, the whole thought behind this part of the conversation is that we're getting ahead of ourselves when we keep mentioning all these players that are going to be free agents next year. But this team is really built to like go for it in 2024. But that doesn't mean that whatever happens in 2024 means the team's just going to go away in 2025. So there's going to be things to pay attention to for sure. And so the young guys are really going to need to show that they're up for the task. So all right. Any other final thoughts on training camp stuff before we get into, we got a little hodgepodge of items to cover at the end here.
Honestly, not much. I think the one thing that I'll be interested in seeing is just how Brock Purdy kind of handles having a full real training camp as the number one quarterback, because the 49ers are slowly starting to shift into like every other NFL team, which is that they'll go as Purdy goes, and this is a chance for him to really take advantage of a year's worth of rest, relaxation, and preparation. So training camp stats don't really matter. I'm not very interested in that, but it'll be a nice thing if sounds like Purdy's playing pretty well and is taking command of this team.
Yeah, his first healthy, normal training camp as a NFL player would be really good. I saw something the other day. I don't know if you saw this, but somebody, I don't know where this came from. I think it was like an unconfirmed, a source, but nobody would say who it was. And like something, it was like, he wasn't actually fully healthy until November or something like that, which is crazy. crazy if true. But yeah, I think it'll be really important for him. This is going to be a pivotal training camp for him to be able to continue to grow and get better for sure. All right. So let's get into a couple of other things. First of all, We talked about this when it happened, or before it happened. We talked about when it happened, and now as we are getting closer to the date of Patrick Willis's Hall of Fame induction, August 3rd is the induction ceremony, and then I believe the Hall of Fame game is the day after that. I think that's right. Which is the, you know, unofficial / official kickoff to the NFL preseason. It's roughly a month before the regular season starts, so all good things. I'm super excited. I think this is probably one. I don't think I've ever watched a Hall of Fame induction, but this is going to be one that I'm gonna put on the calendar and take time to watch this at least his part of the ceremony for sure.
Same here, Robert. You know, I was in two minds about going to Canton, but I decided against it because that's a little too much money to spend. I unfortunately do not have the financial capabilities to justify such a trip. But you know, I'll say this because it's been a pretty long, I'd say, like normally timed episode, and if I keep on going, we'll be here for another hour. So I'll keep it short. I'll keep it brief. But I think when everyone watches football for the first time, there's always like a player or two that draw their attention and they make them fall in love with the game. You know, I think for a lot of fans of the 49ers from an earlier generation, it would be watching Joe Montana and Jerry Rice or Steve Young. But for me, it was Patrick Willis. Just watching him patrol the middle of the field as middle linebacker was the way that I found football to be the most amazing and most interesting sport to watch. Just seeing what he did, how he played, the way that he could control the game from the middle of the field, the ease at which he seemed to do like extraordinary athletic feats, and the consistency he played with. When he retired early, I think I was genuinely worried that, you know, that such a great player wouldn't be able to get into the Hall of Fame because people wouldn't give him the respect of having 3 or 4 years where he would walk onto the field as, you know, he would be slightly older, but everyone would say, oh, that's future Hall of Famer Patrick Willis walking onto the field. He left the game early and it took him a couple tries, but there's very few 49ers, I would say, from the last 20 years or so that unequivocally deserve to be into the Hall of Fame. Patrick Willis is one of them. I think it's a great day for the 49ers. I think it's a great day for remembering those few teams, those 3 years with Jim Harbaugh, where the 49ers ran roughshod over the league out of nowhere, and a flash of glory came in, dominated, came close to winning a Super Bowl, and then kind of faded. Super excited, and just like, there's not much you can say about Willis. I think he's the like modern standard of linebacking in the way that like Ray Lewis represented an old school thumper linebacker who was like very, very, very strong in the box. Willis started this trend of having linebackers who are a little more fluid, able to move, able to cover a little more, super athletes. And you can just look at the 49ers right now with Fred Warner and all across the league to see what the future of middle linebacking has looked like. And a lot of that has to do with the way Patrick Willis played the game. So what an amazing draft for the 49ers. Patrick Willis and Joe Staley. One of the best.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe Staley has an outside shot. I think it's going to hurt that he played on a lot of bad teams. And it's an offensive lineman, which is really hard to, you know, there's not numbers or anything to be like, oh, like he very clearly was, you know, that's going to be difficult. But 2 years in a row for 49ers players, after Bryant Young last year and now Patrick Willis this year. So that's really cool. From a 49ers perspective. All right, a couple other things to get into. Saw this on Bleacher Report. They put out over under win totals, and they went through and did, you know, how many over under. This is according to DraftKings, whatever their numbers that they come up with. 49ers, according to DraftKings, very much expected to win the NFC West by a pretty significant margin. Arizona Cardinals over under 6.5 wins. The Los Angeles Rams over under 8.5 wins, Seattle 7.5 wins, and the 49ers 11.5 wins. So just informational there. What do we think, Akshaz? Does that seem about right to you? Would you go a different direction in any of those? Would you go over or under on either of those places?
So
Arizona at 6.5, over under. Does that seem too high, too low?
I'm going to go over. I think Arizona had a really, really, really good bad year insofar as they were competitive. And they kind of you kind of saw all the places that they really needed extra work and they needed to get better. And I think they took some good steps there. Marvin Harrison Jr. will be a problem.
I don't like it.
So. And, you know, I think they're one of those interesting teams where if Kyler Murray's healthy, they can make some noise. So I'll say over there.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think even if they're right at 7, I think that's possible. The Rams, 8.5.
So this is tough because I feel like this is I'm going to say under because I can't say over for every team. So someone has to be an under. That's just not how wins work.
This is true.
I think the Rams played very, very well last year. I think they found a new identity kind of post remaking their roster. But I think there's a lot of issues that's going to pop up when you don't have Aaron Donald on your defensive line. And Matt Stafford is continuing to get older. They've done a good job retooling around him with a new revamped receiving crew with Puka Nacua, a running game with Kyron Williams. They're a good team. Don't get me wrong. I'm at 8-9 wins with them, but I just, for so long, they've been able to rest on the fact that Aaron Donald demands a triple team.
Yeah.
Or from offensive linemen and can still dominate games. And if you don't have that all the time, I think their defense they didn't really have a great secondary last year anyway. Now you don't have a great pass rush along with it. And It could be tough enough to where I'm gonna say under.
Okay, Seattle 7.5 for Seattle.
This is another tough one because, so Homer me wants to say right, under, yep. Absolutely. Just be like there's no way. But if we're being realistic about this team. I think Seattle is going to be really, really interesting because I think they severely underperformed last year with Pete Carroll's staff and all that. And there's just the coaching is going to be the huge question mark. I have no clue how things are going to go with, I think it's Ryan Grubb, the former Washington offensive coordinator from college, moving over to the NFL, and Mike McDonald there running the defense. I think McDonald is an incredible defensive mind. I also think it's really easy to do all the things he did when you have the corners and the linebackers and the defensive line that the Ravens do. That's a top 5 defense with most anyone coordinating it, and he elevated it. I don't think Seattle has that level of elite dominant talent yet everywhere. So, but that's a pretty good offense. 7.5.
That's why they put these numbers where they put them.
I'll go over, but it's the same. I'm at 7 or that hurt a little bit. It's the same thing where it's I'm right around that point there. I think Seattle's a really high variance team though. I could see them actually giving the Niners a run for their money for the division if the coaching really – if what people kind of said about the Seahawks, which was that they're being held back by coaching and kind of weird schemes and whatever, if that's true and Mike McDonald and Ryan Grubb are able to kind of make these changes, then I could see them being really good. But also see – the coaching not changed the fact that they do have a lack of talent on the defensive and offensive line. So let's go over, but just barely.
All right. And the Niners at 11 and a half.
Yeah, this is an over. I think they're like, even like my most like objective sense, I still think this is an over. The Niners are, I think, have the best roster in the NFL. And I think they have the best roster in the NFL by like a pretty decent margin with how they've reshaped everything. If you just say top five players at their position, tight end, tackle, defensive end, linebacker, maybe corner, running back, like, and then you get into like their overall like depth everywhere, plus Kyle Shanahan as an offensive coordinator slash head coach. There's so much talent here on this team that minus a lot of injuries, I think they can win like 8 or 9 games, kind of like playing like a B game every year. Which is what they do half the time anyway.
That's been the last two seasons for sure.
So I mean, I don't know. I'm usually pretty like pessimistic about the 49ers, I feel like, and everyone who listens to this podcast knows that loud and clear. But this feels like their year in a way that like last year didn't really feel like their year. It felt like it could have been, but this feels like the year where everything kind of like really, really culminates together. I don't know if like how many of our listeners watch hockey, but this gives me the same energy of the Washington Capitals, who had been so close for so long at banging at the doorstep but unable to break through. They had their one year where it all went their way and they were able to win the Stanley Cup. And I think the 49ers are just too good to kind of fall apart here. I think there's so many places that they can improve from last year. Secondary can be better. The defensive line can be significantly better. The linebackers can be better. I think the passing game will be more efficient with Brock Purdy having another year. I think they'll find even better ways to take advantage of Christian McCaffrey. I think they'll be able to better integrate some of their weapons instead of having a his turn kind of way about offense. And it's a lot to say that there are so many ways to improve when this team was the number one seed, the NFC, and made it to the Super Bowl and was a quarter away from winning the Super Bowl. But I think this will be the best version of the 49ers. And it better be, because this is the last time we'll see this version of the 49ers anyway.
For sure. I'm going Arizona over, Rams under. I'm going to say 8 wins for them. 49ers over. Seattle also under. So right at 7. So Arizona, I don't even know if that's possible. Arizona and Seattle both at 7 and Rams at 8. Is that even possible? I don't know. We'll find out. Speaking of which, so USA Today also put out their record predictions. I don't know if you saw this. They like chaos, mm-hmm. apparently. Okay. 49ers finishing 13-4 and winning the NFC West and getting the number one overall seed. Rams at 10-7 and a 6th seed. Cardinals at 7-10. Seahawks at 5-12. The rest of the NFC is the Packers at 13-4. The Eagles at 10-7. I don't know. The Falcons at 9-8, winning the NFC South because somebody has to, I guess. The Lions at 11-6, with the 5th seed overall. Chiefs, Jets, Colts, whatever. Bengals, Jags, Browns in the AFC. We could talk about this a long time. That AFC South is a disaster. I'm not sure how they came up with that. But anywho, oh, sorry, and Bills too. Sorry. So Chiefs, Jets, Colts, Bengals, Bills, Jags, Browns in from 1-7 in the AFC. And then, because again, chaos, the Jets winning the Super Bowl. Akshaz, do you know over who?
Give me the. It wasn't the Rams, because I read that they lose in the first.
Think chaos. What's the most chaotic thing they could possibly do?
Falcons.
Not quite that much chaos.
too far. All right, what do we got? Who are they beating?
The Jets and Aaron Rodgers beating.
Is it the 49ers?
Nope. More poetry.
Oh, the Packers.
There you go.
Oh, it took me a second. Okay.
So both 2 seeds winning their respective conferences, and the Jets bounding out of nowhere to win the Super Bowl 59. I don't know how you can reason. I mean, the Jets are probably going to be a good team. They have them at 12-5. That feels like you're really hoping that there's no like residual effects to Aaron Rodgers missing a whole year and being older and that sort of thing. It's like that's banking on a lot. Their defense is going to be really good and a real problem. I don't know. I don't see it, but maybe. It's a little wild. That just seems crazy to me. But anywho, that prediction comes merely out of the fact that like what would be the most like the thing that you would from a media perspective. This is from a media outlet. From a media perspective, what would be the best thing to look at? And they're like, oh, we're tired of the Chiefs and 49ers playing the Super Bowl. Let's let Aaron Rodgers beat his old team and then, you know, maybe ride off into the sunset, which would just be hilarious, but also annoying.
You know, what's interesting to me is that I feel like a lot of predictions last year, at the very least, were all like choose AFC team you want to win the Super Bowl over the 49ers. And the logic was just that, all right, so the 49ers will probably make the Super Bowl, but I really want like the Chiefs or the Bills or I think it was the Jets to win the Super Bowl. So that's who I'll predict will win over the 49ers. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if they do that this year. I don't know. I think it's going to be an interesting season for sure. There are a lot of storylines. There's always one or two teams that absolutely seem to collapse, as always. There's one or two teams that seem to outperform preseason expectations. But at the end of the day, for the last few years, the Super Bowl's been who we thought it would be, and it's been won by who we thought would win it for the most part. So
I'm getting tired of that.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I'm getting ready for a win, Robert. You know, I think
I like it. I like the way you're talking about it. You keep going.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who will be sticking with us for the full season, as you all should, just Wait till the 49ers lose two in a row, and then we'll see.
I just be like, "This is the worst." Who said that? They're not winning anything. Season's over. Prediction. You're predicting it against yourself. All right. Final two thoughts. The first is the most random thing. So apparently, Kyle Shanahan went on the radio today and said that he offered Bill Belichick a role with the team, and Belichick said, "No, I'm good." He said he told him he could do whatever he wanted. Like you can have any spot you want. You can even be the defensive coordinator. You can just come in and be a consultant. You just be a coach. I think that would have been interesting, but I'm not sure that those two people would have been able to coexist. I'm just throwing that out there.
I think actually as an advisory role, it could have been. I think if Belichick had like ownership over a position or like a team or what am I blanking
unit?
On? Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't know why that took me so long to get there. It's training camp for all of us.
We're still getting there. We're getting there. Warming up.
I think if he had ownership over a unit, it would have been a problem because then, you know, I feel like it's really hard to tell Bill Belichick, hey, man, I need you to like do this for me. Right. But as like someone coming in and just being like watching film and being like, you could play this or giving some scheme suggestions. It doesn't hurt. I like the fact that Shanahan asked, though. I think there are a lot of coaches who would be too like concerned about like reaching out. But if you can get advice from one of the greatest ever, if not the greatest, you might as well.
Yeah, and you wonder maybe if he had been able to do what Brandon Staley is doing, essentially, that might have been an interesting type of thing. We still don't really know what Brandon Staley's actually doing, like technically. It's just kind of there. Assistant head coach and doing other stuff guy. That would have been interesting. But yeah, I think it would have had to have been very much like, hey Bill, what do you think about this? Like not could you imagine if Belichick had been like, I want to coach in the booth and then like what happened with Steve Wilkes last year? Shanahan would have been like, look, it's not going well. I'm going to need you to. I'm good. I'm staying up here. Okay. Bye, Bill. Thanks for talking. Anyway, all right. Last topic of conversation. This has been a long one, but we needed to really, you know, stretch the legs and all that kind of stuff. It seems like there's been a lot of players that have been asked about this, and the conversation seems to be coming up a lot. The 18 game schedule is an inevitability of our lifetime, probably in the very near future. It's a terrible idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really, I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah. I think that the NFL is like, it's trying to find a balance between making like a boatload of money every time two football teams step on the field and like getting to the point where people will be like, okay, maybe we don't want to watch this anymore, while also not killing all their players. But
yeah, yeah.
That third part doesn't seem to be super important all the time.
It's less.
I think the reason why, at least in my opinion, the reason why football is so like addictive in its nature, beyond the fact that football is super cool, is that it happens so infrequently. Mm-hmm. That games really, really do matter. It's not like you can kind of zone out of a football game because there's only like 16 plus more of them. Now there might be 17 plus more. But I think the argument that you need to have two bye weeks makes perfect sense. I think for an 18 game schedule to make sense, they have to cut Thursday night football.
Yep.
But who knows? This is all stuff that'll be collectively bargained when the next time. And I think it's a real nexus point, I think, because the NFL is starting to realize that, like, in this world of cord cutting and streaming and, like, you're like what you actually like play is super important for getting eyes on TV, that the NFL is kind of above the world of like media. They can do whatever they want and people will watch. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, I think it would have to be I think you're right. Getting rid of Thursday Night Football would be a need. I think the other thing is, I don't remember who I saw. Maybe George Kittle mentioned this. George's got a lot of things to say, a lot of thoughts. That you would need to have some like all-star break type situation where everybody have their regular bye week at some point, and then you have to find another spot where literally everyone takes the week off. Like that kind of thing is the only way that could work. I honestly think that's not a bad idea for a 17 game schedule, but you know, that's just me. But I think you're right. I think it's an unfortunate kind of thing. Obviously the NFL has been reminded of, its mortality to a certain extent as well with this lawsuit with the Sunday ticket thing. That nobody will see any money about that for years and years and years, but it's something that's got to be on the front of their thoughts when they're making these decisions. So it'll be really interesting to see how that comes along. So all right, well, that was a lot of things. We got into a lot of stuff. Training camp is here, ready to go, man. 49ers open the season, the second Sunday in September? Monday night. Sorry. First Monday night game against those Super Bowl winning Jets. Just kidding. So, Akshaz, any final thoughts on this one? And they can include how many times during the lead up to that first Monday night game they will talk about A, Aaron Rodgers needs to be a 49ers fan, and B, whether or not this will be a Super Bowl preview. Go.
And C, that, what's it called? The player who caused Aaron Rodgers to rupture his Achilles.
Oh, right.
Oh, good
call. Yeah.
You know, I honestly, training camp kind of snuck up on me. So I think it's super exciting. I just like anyone who listens to this podcast, and I know both of us, you know, the 49ers are a huge part of like our fandom and what we like pay attention to, what we watch and read about. So I think it's a big deal. I think it's super exciting. I think, like I was saying, in the offseason, now starts the point where every single team in the NFL, all 32, think they have a shot at winning the Super Bowl. But we're fans of a team that actually has a shot of winning the Super Bowl. So that's double fun. And yeah, man, I mean, it's been a couple of hard years. It's been tough. They've been sad at some point. But I'm genuinely saying I feel pretty good about this year, and that means a lot. I think all the things are, everything's coming together, and it's time to get excited, because like we were just saying, There are only so many NFL games every season. So when this time rolls around, it's, you know, get the energy flowing, get pumped up, watch Patrick Willis hype videos before he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, yell at your TV over preseason, which I know we all do sometimes, even though it's only preseason.
I can't even watch the games where I am, so it's not a problem.
And just let's get ready to go. I mean, obviously, Niner Noise will have you covered for all the news and analysis because we're just as ready to go as you guys are. So I'm super excited. Can't wait for it to start.
I love it. Keep the optimism going. Keep it rolling. Just all until February of 2025. Just boom, keep on going. All right. Well, that was well said, as always. And I do think it's going to be endless amounts of conversations about all three of those topics, by the way. All right. So as always, thanks for listening to this episode of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please, as Akshat said, please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis. And be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
American Giant makes great clothing. T-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.